This is an AMI podcast.
Welcome to the best of Double Tap on YouTube.
Your chance to catch up on the videos we posted this week.
Now, here's your hosts, Stephen Scott and Sean Preece.
Hey guys, welcome to another Double Tap on YouTube. I am Stephen Scott.
And I am Sean Preece. Hello.
Hello, how are you all?
I am great, thank you, Stephen. It's so good to be on YouTube again. I'm loving it here. I'm getting used to it, you know.
I love this little box on the internet. I'm quite happy playing around in here. Today I want to talk about She Who Shan't Be Named.
Oh,
that was actually harder to say than her name, to be perfectly honest. She Who Shan't Be Named. Lady S is who I'm talking about. She's inside my iPhone. Got the idea yet? Right. So, can't say her name because it'll set it off. I had to make a change to my phone. Because of you, by the way.
Make a change.
Yeah, can't sing on here.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Okay, I'll take that
we'll be
back.
Struck by the copyright police.
What change did you have to make because of me? What have I done?
Well, do you remember this issue we were having with Lady S discussing the follow-up mode? I was talking to you about the whole issue where, you ask a question and all of a sudden it's just waiting and waiting and waiting for you to continue to talk. And I was like, yes. I've got to turn this off. And it turns out you have to go into accessibility to S Lady settings in there, and then you can turn on a feature called Type to Siri, which means that you can no longer use the side button.
Yes.
To enact Lady S. I mean, it's just ridiculous, but all of a sudden the follow-up thing stops working, so that's useful. But
okay.
I can't use the side button anymore. It's just rubbish.
Well, you can use it. It just brings up a keyboard where you type your command to Lady S.
I'd like to go back to my previous point, Your Honour. Rubbish!
Yes, okay. It's not great, I will admit. But I think we should explain what the problem is with follow-up mode. So in follow-up mode...
People can figure this out, can they?
Which was introduced in iOS 17. It meant that you could interrupt Lady S or continue a conversation with Lady S without having to say the wake word again, which sounds great. And we've had that feature on the Amazon Echo smart speakers for a while. Difference being is that you were able to toggle it on or off. In iOS 17, you can't toggle it on or off.
Yeah, there's no setting for it.
No setting whatsoever. And the problem is that if you're using VoiceOver or you cough or someone else says something whilst Lady S is giving you an answer to something, it just shuts up and starts listening for your next command. So it meant that you couldn't listen to your messages or emails without it, getting a few sentences in and then just stopping and starting to listen. So, yes, that is the way to turn it off or disable it. It's not the greatest. It's a bit clunky, but it works.
And I miss having the side button option. I really do. I mean, I suppose I could turn my action button into that, but then it just feels a bit of a mess, to be honest.
Yeah.
And it kind of leads... Actually, in a way, it's kind of perfect for her because it's just a mess anyway. The whole thing is a mess.
Wow, that's strong words, Mr. Apple fanboy. Really?
But it is. Let's be honest about it. I mean, Lady S has never been the greatest. I mean, she's been good for some things, but not all. And then, on a HomePod, for example, great for telling you the individual members' ages of the Beatles at some point in, recent history. But, that's about it, really. Beyond that, as an assistant, I know there's people out there who disagree with me on this, who find great value out of her, but I've just not found it. And it's not that this is the problem in some ways. It's not the capability that's the problem. It's the continual mistakes that are being made. So, the other day I'm trying to call Marco Flalo and it says, you don't have a Marco Polo in your contact.
I know
I don't, because I asked you to call Marco Flalo. Then she says, wait for it, you don't have a Marco Flalo in your contacts. What would you like to do? And I yelled, FaceTime Marco Flalo. And I said, okay, I'll FaceTime then. What?
Yeah.
Hang on.
As
five
ever,
seconds
in your
ago,
case.
I wasn't even a contact, and now you figured out how FaceTime? I mean, come on.
Shouting is the answer to everything, particularly in Scottish.
You got it. I don't think we're allowed to play the clip, but there's a clip. You got to look it up. It's Larry David on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Be aware of the language on it. But, he's having a bit of an issue with Lady S in the car. It is very amusing and it is very true to life. You should definitely go check that out. But Look,
I want to pick you up on something. I think Siri was groundbreaking at the time. You remember when it was introduced at WWDC, mm-hmm. and there was actually a blind person in the video to explain how useful it could be for sending texts and things. We were all blown away. I think Siri has declined in its capabilities over the years. There's no denying that. And I think I get so frustrated with it. But let's be fair. I mean, you know, it was the first, I think, the first of its kind.
You're right. I think it was certainly better. Weirdly, it was better years ago than it is today.
Yes.
And we do forget that. We do forget that because we're so used to what we're dealing with today. You know, you only remember the most recent experiences. And, you know, you're absolutely right. There were so many more things you could do with this back then. Back even 5 years ago, it was far more capable of reading playing voicemails, playing audio messages, reading emails. All that stuff. Now it just seems to struggle with all of that, which is a real pain. Yeah. But it kind of leads us on to our topic today, which is what are we looking for in iOS 18? Because the rumor is that Siri will get huge enhancements. I mean, look, as far as I'm concerned, they should just take the whole apparatus that runs Siri, take it out the back and torch it and start again. That would be the best solution to the problem.
I think that's what they will do.
And I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think that the talk of almost replacing the engine in the car is the best analogy I've heard for this, which is that they're going to just take the whole engine out, toss it away, and put this new machine learning system in there. And if the rumors are true, and I really hope this has got to be the year for this, Apple have got to get this right because they're way behind as it is. And Apple's not a company to react in this way. They're not used to this OpenAI world that we're now in, where we're seeing huge advances week in, week out. That's not how Apple work. Apple take time. They like to take their time. But the problem is everybody else is beating them. Okay, Google's having a few problems at the moment with Gemini. Don't ask it to paint a picture of the founding fathers of America. You might get a surprise. You know, that kind of thing. And that's going to be resolved and that'll be fixed, right? But you look at Sora from OpenAI, you know, this new text-to-video tool. Now, there was a video that keeps getting shown online of Will Smith eating spaghetti, which was like a made-up video a year ago. It was it wasn't a real video, obviously. It's an AI video, but it was absolutely terrible. It's like he's eating spaghetti, but he's putting his whole hand in his mouth, and you know the spaghetti's getting flung over his shoulder. It's like the way
disappears.
I eat. That was like a real version of me eating, but it was Will Smith. And you know that video compared to today, where they've kind of done a similar video, is like you would swear it was him. It's so good. And, you know, the improvements in a very short space of time in a year are incredible. Apple need to catch up, right?
I think so. Well, yeah, absolutely they do, yes. But you know what it's like with Apple? It's been said so many times. It's the wait and see. And then they come out with something that's so polished and ahead of everything else. Do we think that could happen now with AI? I would be absolutely amazed if that happened, I must say. But then again, it's Apple. You know, there's always that slim chance that they may come out and say, yeah, we've seen how you've all been doing AI. Now, here's the Apple AI. I can see that. That wouldn't surprise me that much. But I think they've maybe left it a little bit too late. But is that what we want from iOS 18? Is it going to be all about AI? I'm not sure.
I think AI is everything
we're talking about lately, though.
If you believe the rumors, the idea is that it will improve. There'll be a new UI design. There's going to be lots of changes coming up, which will, I guess, usher in these changes. Talk of macOS perhaps next year getting a bit of a redesign. But I think a lot of us are kind of intrigued to see. And that's the thing. We are kind of looking, not so much for just improvements in the AI front, but I think that is definitely the area Apple needs to show its face, or at least show its hand, perhaps, is a better way to put it.
Yeah.
You know, I think we all have to remember, though, and this is an important part of this. The reason that Lady S is actually as bad as she is because we don't, you know, Apple doesn't go off and mine for information and, you know, suck in lots of our private data in order to create a better assistant. That is how every other one works. It's about taking your data and creating a better assistant. The Amazon Echo, for example, everything you say is used to enhance it. So if it gets something wrong, it will be able to learn from that. She, the Apple version, doesn't have that option. It doesn't do that. Now, there's talk doesn't that it she? Does to some degree, but it seems to be more on device. And I think this is where
it's
Apple
anonymous.
Well, yeah, that's, it's anonymized. It makes it more difficult to get personal results in a better way or be cleverer in some ways. And I think that, you know, in the background to all of this, I think that it's going to be ultimately a fight is going to erupt, I think, between Apple and the other companies around where the data lives. That's where things are going to change. So Apple, for example, will, I think, do everything on their device. Everything you do will be on device.
I agree.
And all that the data will be stored and it will build from there, right? And then when you look at the other companies, they'll be sending off to the cloud and that data will be anonymized, of course, but that will be used pick up the slack on everything as a bigger project.
So is that the reason why we're waiting for Apple to make their move into machine learning, into the AI, because of the privacy? Apple almost sets up obstacles in its own way because of its stance on privacy. That's probably actually a good call. It probably is something to do with that. But at the same time, I'm using, we talked about it before, I'm still using that Pi AI, okay? Mm. And I'm using that more and more, just asking questions. Just the other day, so I just got the Orbit Reader 20, and I asked it, how do I do a factory reset on an Orbit Reader 20? And, you know, 2 seconds later, it's telling me step-by-step guide.
Yeah.
And the way it's telling me with that amazing, beautiful voice and, you know, the way I don't have to think about how I'm phrasing it or if I stumble through my sentence halfway, I don't have to restart. I can just, you know, just correct myself and carry on. And it knows exactly what I'm saying. That is the future. And that is the way to interact with technology, and AI enables that. And I think unless Siri, it's got to be this year. I think it's got to be, or at least mentioned this year at WWDC. Even if it's not rolled out, they've got to give us a glimpse of what's going to happen, because otherwise they may just wait too long.
Do you think there'll be any connection between it and accessibility, whatever it is?
Oh, well, I would hope so. I mean, just the fact that, you know, giving it more power to understand exactly the context of what you're asking it and understand the commands better, and giving that that system-wide integration. So, you know, turn on, I mean, what do we use right now? We both used just before we started recording, turn on Do Not Disturb, for example. Yeah. But, you know, taking that to the end.
Which it always gets wrong as well, by the way.
Well, yes, I had to say it twice
tells me
because
it's already off. I know. Yes. Could you turn it on, please?
Exactly right. But I think, you know, the voice interface is key to accessibility. And we talked about this before as well on the radio show about how AI could change the face of not just the, you know, Windows or Mac operating system, but assistive tech as well. How we use screen readers. All of it could change because that understanding of context and natural language is key for getting people to use technology.
It's and you're seeing amazing. That already, right? I mean, just asking for those instructions about the Orbit Writer, that has given you information in a way that is easy for you to understand, deal with, you know, step by step through. That would have taken you going onto the web with a screen reader, going through headings to get to the answer, getting to the search results, getting to the web page, navigating that, accepting the cookies, all that stuff. It just bypasses all of that stuff and just goes, right, here you go, straight to the information. That is where AI can excel, I think, for accessibility. That alone would be amazing, and there's going to be so much more, but that alone is brilliant. And I think we've got that, and that's good. And, of course, that's available on our iPhones right now. But I think that Apple themselves could do a heck of a lot. I just hope it doesn't come out as a gimmick. I hope it isn't about just taking, you know, like creating images from text. I mean, I just don't get this obsession people have with creating pictures all the time. It's like, what on earth is this going to be used for that is in any way purposeful? I don't get it. Is this a blind thing? I just don't get it.
I kind of agree with you, and I always sort of stop listening at that point. But then again, you know, when we're talking about Sora just then with the text command line, just text commands to generate videos, there are blind people out there that will want to use that and are very excited by the possibility of creating our own images and videos just by telling AI a description of what we're looking for. That could be incredible. How else would we do that without getting someone else involved? We couldn't. So there's another way that AI can actually assist us when it comes to accessible and producing artwork and videos.
I must admit, I can't argue with that one. The video one appeals to me way more than the image thing does. I think partly because the images just doesn't, I don't get it. I'm like, I get it from a creator point of view, or someone who wants to be like a digital artist, whatever. I can understand that, but like, yeah. Why would I want to, you know, say, oh, you know, a picture of a dog with a cake on its head? I just don't see the point in that. It's like, okay, I've got the picture now, but so what? What am I going to do
just
with it?
Just for fun? Well, it depends. I mean, everyone's got their own use case. Maybe I want to create my own funny T-shirt or whatever that I want a picture on the front. I have no idea what the use case is, but the fact is that it now becomes something that we can do, which previously we couldn't do without assistance.
Okay, final question. What does Apple, or what happens if Apple doesn't show off its top, you know, machine learning tool this year? What happens there? Because we're at an interesting point. OpenAI moving along, Google moving along, Amazon moving along, Samsung, of course, as well, moving along with this. And every company sticking AI into absolutely everything. I mean, you'll find a toaster soon with AI in it, if there isn't one already.
So, and you would, you know, buy it straight
and I'll
away.
Buy it, absolutely, if it can get my toast just right. But, you know, or it can burn the Double Tap logo into it, then I'll be, you know, sticking a toaster right
away. Oh, cool.
Exactly, right? How cool would that be? Now I'm creating images. I'm not creating real images. I'm creating toast-based images. Okay, all right, you got me. But, you know, what happens if Apple doesn't pull the trigger on this time around?
Well, quite honestly, it's Apple. Probably nothing. They will get another year of grace and bring it out later on to great applause. I mean, this is Apple. They've got quite a lot of leeway in the tech world. So I think
they'll
be
absolutely
fine. I think I do. I do think they'll get away with it for a year. I don't think they should. I hope, I really hope that they're working on it purely from an end user, from a customer point of view, because I want Lady S to be better. Mm. I want my experience of using the phone to be easier. So I hope we get there. And because of all those AI apps that are out there now, ChatGPT, the PI that I mentioned before, and so many others, we now got a taste of what this could be. And I'm getting annoyed and frustrated with how limiting Lady S is at the moment. But I think, quite honestly, I think Apple could get away with another year.
Wow. Okay. Well, we shall see what happens at WWDC. That is one event. I mean, I must admit, I always look forward to any Apple event, as you well know. But this one could be interesting. There's no way of knowing. You know, everyone will tell you they've got rumors and they've got inside knowledge. They don't. We only know until actually, you know, when it turns up. But one thing we do know for sure is that whilst this year is being seen in the PC world as the year of AI in PCs, and, you know, some manufacturers of smartphones, Android smartphones in particular, are making similar claims about their smartphones, it's important to remember Apple have had this technology, this machine learning capability, built into their devices for some amount of years now, more than you'd think. And
yes,
so the capability is there. They are not sitting like, you know, for example, Intel or, you know, other companies waiting for NVIDIA to get more GPUs created. They've got all this hardware in their devices now. That's what Apple Silicon, I would believe, was built for. It's built to do this kind of machine learning. And we maybe never realized it at the time, but I think we'll look back and say that was what Silicon was all about. It was creating the capability and the speeds to allow, and the processing actually, to enable us to have the best experience of machine learning on an Apple device. And that will be interesting to watch. So I hope this year we are...
I agree.
And bear in mind as well, one final thought, whatever we see at WWDC this year won't turn up until later in the year. So
yes,
the chances are there'll be a new iPhone that will have an even faster processor with even more capabilities than ever before that will be built specifically for this function, even though your existing iPhone will also be able to do it.
Going out on a limb there, Stephen Scott.
I'm pushing it.
I predict it will be the best iPhone we've ever made.
You're listening to the Best of Double Tap on YouTube.
Today, we're going to talk about public transit and an app that can make it a lot easier. Let's find out about the app. It's called Move It, and one of the company's reps is here to tell us all about it. Why don't you introduce yourself, Ziv?
Hi, so I'm Ziv Kabareti. I'm the VP Products at Move It, and I'm located in Israel. Our offices is south to Tel Aviv in Israel.
Well, first off, wonderful to have you here. Thank you so much for coming on, Ziv. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So tell us, for people who don't know, and I mean, you'd have to be living under a rock not to have heard of the app Move It, I imagine. But for those who haven't heard about Move It, tell us what it is.
So Move It is the world leading app helping users or riders across the world to basically navigate in public transportation. We truly believe that, you know, mobility is some kind of a basic human right. And we are here to help and make public transportation more accessible and easier to understand. And we know that this is something that comes with a lot of anxiety and uncertainty. And in different cities of the world, there are, you know, less reliable services or more reliable services. So when you're using an app, this is where the app can tell you how to go from point A to point B, what are the modes of transit that can move you around, when is the relevant mode of transportation is coming to pick you up, and of course, when are you going to arrive to your destination. So this is what we do in a kind of in a nutshell, in a high level.
And it's interesting to me because, of course, as you say, this is available around the world.
Correct.
So you're feeding into so many different types of services in different places. How do you gather all the information?
So Move It is accessible or available, sorry, in around 3,500 cities. It's more than 110 countries around the globe. We believe, by the way, that we have the most accurate and the richest public transportation repository. So if you are compare us to different apps, we are much bigger than anybody else in that field. And the way we are able to basically work in so many cities around the globe is, A, we are connected to various of, let's say, feeds that are publicly available, but we also nurture a very unique community. It's very unique to us, a community of people, and we call them moviters. These are a group of heroes, basically, in different cities, villages, different countries around the world. And they basically log in to a system where they are basically helping us to add additional information in areas where the information is not publicly available. In fact, this is how we started. If you take Move It, let's say 10, 11 years ago, where information was at the bare minimum in very few cities, let's say, around the world, and we wanted to expand, we basically tapped into this community and nurtured it and grew it, and they helped us open our service in each cities by basically adding the lines and the schedules and the stop locations and all that from scratch. Think about it as the Wikipedia of public transportation, where everybody can contribute and there are level of moderations and people, you know, with different levels of authority may basically rule if this is a good change or not a good change, etc. So it's a mix of official data and curated data coming from a unique community of people who volunteer this information to Move It.
Now, of course, and we'll talk about the accessibility and, of course, the impact that an app like yours has on the disability community in a moment. But I think more broadly, when you think about the availability of this information, it does encourage more people to use public transit, which, of course, is very much on trend at the moment. Everyone's about being environmental and finding other ways to get to work or get to the shops, get out and about. You know, we're trying to move away from using cars all the time. And I guess apps like yours can contribute to that, right? By providing that information, giving people the knowledge and the comfort to know that their bus is coming, where it will be, or train, or whatever it might be.
Exactly. And not only that, and, you know, we feel that if we do it correctly in kind of in your own town, that you kind of know how to navigate even without sometimes without a map or an app now. But we want that if you do that once and then you go to another city, another country, you travel around the world, and then you open Move It in that area where you are basically clueless about, you know, the area, the network of transit, we want to make you a hero at that moment. So once you did that, you know, in your own town, in an area that you feel comfortable, and you have this habit, understanding the traffic, understanding the real-time information, understanding service alerts, all that ecosystem that we work in, now you transfer or you go to a different cities, a different continent, You open MOVEit and you can ride public transportation, usually without any hassle. So that's a skill that we are basically adding to our riders, that if you do it once, you can do it everywhere around the world. If you think about it, it's kind of the Uber mentality. If you was able to catch a ride in Manhattan, you will be able to do it in San Francisco or Paris or et cetera. So we are riding on the same mantra.
It's funny you pick up on Uber, because that's exactly what I did with Uber. And it was funny, actually, exactly I had that moment. I actually call it my Uber moment, because that's exactly what happened to me. I was in a different city and I just thought for a second, I wonder if I open Uber here, will it be the same Uber that I get at home? And it was, and it used the same account and it used the same card info. And I guess it just made the whole thing much more pleasurable. It meant that I used the service, and the same applies here. And I must admit, I never gave it much thought. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's not something I gave much thought to. So I guess that Uber moment can become my MOVEit moment as well, which I think is kind of cool. I think people might use it, because I travel around the world quite a lot, and oftentimes you land somewhere and you're absolutely right. I'm constantly thinking, where is the next bus? Could I even use the public transport here? Would this be something that would be available? Because it's so foreign, yet, you know, buses, if you know where you live, that the number six mm-hmm. bus will take you into town or whatever, that's fine. But then you're dropped into another city and suddenly, you know, you have all these bus numbers and routes and lines. You don't know what places are, where things are. This can be really, really useful. How do you, I mean, it must be a lot to deal with, because every city is different. Or do you find that there's actually a commonality among cities, that actually there are similarities? Okay, the bus lines may be different, the numbers are different, but ultimately there's a commonality
yes.
that makes you able to display that information in an understandable way, whatever you
there,
are.
There is a commonality, and you know, some of the habits, let's say, like if you are, you know, getting into the rider's brain, are basically the same. I want to get somewhere. I want to know, you know, some schedules. I want to understand where is the next, or where is the departure stop, where is the arrival stop, etc. But you are right that many cities in many countries are so different in how they organize the data, make it accessible or not accessible. Real-time information sometimes is not available, sometimes it is available. And even payment, or you know, paying for that ride, can be very, very different when you are traveling in New York versus San Francisco versus Paris, London or Tel Aviv. The basic notion is you need to pay, but the way you pay, you know, in some areas is by a plastic card, in some areas by, you know, taking your phone, sometimes, you know, scanning a QR or tapping, or different, you know, methods, or all the different discounts and profiling, etc. So this is a big, big issue for us to deal in different cities or countries. But I would say that, you know, to some degree, this is the MOVEit DNA. We understood that basically when we founded the company. We knew that it's not going to be plug and play, that once we connected, let's say, Tel Aviv or Israel to our database, then automatically it's going to be up and running in New York. No, we knew that we needed to do some legwork and find the sources and find the relevant data and connect it to different feed and integrate with different partners and providers, which means that we have kind of a backbone or a framework that is well positioned to connect additional services and add additional cities or countries if it's still, you know, relevant. Our biggest, you know, markets are pretty kind of covered, and we here and there we're adding small cities in different countries. So we took that into our, you know, into our design principle and development principle, that, hey, we have a foundation that we need to build on top of that, and integrations and connecting to different providers is our bread and butter. We cannot do it if our ecosystem or our system would be, you know, blocked or walled gardened or all that, you know, different, let's say, techniques. And we understood that this is our key, basically, to grow. And we knew that we cannot be, you know, a reliable service or a meaningful service if we only operate in, you know, 10 cities around the world. It doesn't, you know, it's not a good service, basically.
Yeah. I want to ask you, because the data that you get, that you feed into this app in order for it to work, and obviously we can discuss the front end and we will talk about the accessibility, but I want to ask you about the data itself, because I guess since starting this app, as you say, 10, 11 years ago, when right back to the beginning, a lot's changed, or maybe it hasn't. I don't know, because I'm intrigued by this. The data that you get, I guess, comes from the companies that put in the timetable information. That's one thing. But bus tech has got smarter, right? So they have GPS built in now. So you can, and in MoveIt, I can tell where the bus is. I can tell how far away the bus is, when it's coming. I can get alerts to that. You know, that's really cool. So that's great. I guess that all helps, but you know, it kind of shines a spotlight here on a huge amount of data that's available and how bus tech has got smarter as well.
So absolutely. And we see that basically in different layers. There is this kind of what we call the schedule or the static data, which is a schedule that each provider is, let's say in 2024, is basically kind of required by usually governments and cities and public transportation, ministries. They are required to publish this information, you know, but 10 years ago, it was a PDF printed on walls on stops, right? Yep. So they are still probably doing that, but they are also required to make this information available. But this is the first level, and usually it's not a reliable information because we know that it doesn't take any traffic information into account. So the next level is, this is where the bus tech is actually comes handy in areas. And unfortunately, by the way, it's not that, let's say, popular in all around the world, but let's say in the major cities, buses are well equipped with GPS, and this information travels to the cloud, and those providers and authorities also, again, really depending on the country and the cities, usually those providers are making this information available. So MoveIt and any other app, you know, Google Maps, etc., they can tap into this information and make use of it. By the way, we use this information. We also augment that information with traffic and other signals. And then we predict that, if the bus is basically here, it will take 7 minutes for the bus to pick you up in the stops in, you know, this junction or this street number, etc. So we make this our own calculation. We don't get this calculation from the bus company. We only get the position of the bus, and we need to figure out and take into account a lot of different signals and understanding and history, information, and a lot of AI and machine learning that we are applying in order to enrich this, just one position on the map, in order to predict the entire route. And this bus is going to run for the next 2 hours, let's say, for the destination, for the destination. We need to make sure that along this, route, and maybe there are, 30 stops for that bus to make. We want to be very accurate when the bus is going to arrive to the stops, because either you are going to onboard it or to depart from it. So it, of course, changes the entire algorithm of and calculation of the approximate time of arrival or approximate time for departure.
That's incredible. I didn't realize you were doing those calculations yourselves and kind of putting all that work into that on the app side. I kind of thought some of that would be provided to you. So that's very interesting to learn about. Let's talk about accessibility, because for a lot of blind people, we're always looking, like me, looking for an app to use that we can go out and we can, you talked earlier about anxiety going out. So, I mean, we talk about this on our show all the time, the anxiety of getting over the front door. And a big part of it is making sure we get the bus. We don't want to miss it. If we go to a new place, we want to use the public transport, but we want to know that we've got the information at hand, because, in my case, for example, I can't read signs. I can't read any signage that's available, digital or otherwise. Or that PDF, for example, it's just stuck on a bus stop. I can't read any of that. I need it through an app. So are you aware of that, I'm guessing, but How are you developing that to make sure that blind people like me using, say, VoiceOver on an iPhone or TalkBack on an Android phone are getting that information correctly?
Yeah, so I would say that we are working on these domains in several levels. The first level would be basically the UI itself, and we are leveraging as much as we can the phone and the operating system technologies, and you mentioned VoiceOver, TalkBack, enhancing or enlarging the font size and things like that. So whenever our users are getting into accessibility mode in the phone, and you mentioned the VoiceOver, what we do in MoveIt is we are adding additional information to be read out to our users. So for example, if you are managing to type your destination to go, and then MoveIt will provide you, let's say, three routes. If you will see the user interface, you would basically see few icons, right? You will see an icon of a bus and an icon of a person who is walking, and then maybe the digit 5 because you need to walk 5 minutes, and then you will see duration, and maybe you see an abbreviation of that, and you see, you know, 34 minutes. So a person who can see this information can, you know, do all this logic in the brain and understand and even compare between those routes because he understands, okay, this is an icon of a bus, this is an icon of a person who's walking, et cetera, et cetera. However, if a person cannot see, then we understand this is meaningless. If we're just going to let the phone read out the text that I am seeing on my eyes, then it's basically nonsense. But what we do is we are adding additional context and text that is hidden from the person who is seeing this information. But the VoiceOver and the TalkBack would add additional information that makes this information much more understandable. So for example, for these routes that are suggested for you to your destination, we will read out route number 1, take bus 408 from location, you know, the street name, and you need to walk 5 minutes. The duration of this route is 48 minutes, and you will arrive by 12:45 p.m. And then it continues, route number 2, take bus 207 from this to that. So we are adding additional information that is only available when the VoiceOver or TalkBack functionality kicks in. This makes the app really, really helpful. And we've tested it with so many people who have visual impairments, and they told us this is a lifesaver. And by the way, we are even getting insights and input and improvement when we are talking to a group of people with those impairments, and we tell them, hey, Just use this app. Tell us what you understand. And somebody said, you know what? In this screen, I didn't understand because the sequence of reading was a bit confusing. So we take that back to our lab and understand why it's confusing. Do we need to say this information? Do we need to hide it? Do we need to add information? So we are in a constant kind of involvement and iteration to make this product fully accessible to people with visual impairments, but not only that. So for example, the other level that we work is actually on the data level. So if we know, for example, that stops or vehicles, buses, trains, trams, subways, stations of subways, etc., are accessible for people with, you know, wheelchairs, even, you know, young couple with strollers, then we would point it out in our results, in our itineraries, suggested routes, everywhere that we can share this information and can basically tell the rider, hey, if you take this route, note that, you know, bus line, whatever, 500 or this train or this subway are accessible, and there is a special ramp that you can basically, you know, go and be comfortable that you will make it and you will get to your destination. So we have that. We also work with different agencies in different areas of the world. And we made some partnership, for example, in Israel, And I'm sure there are similar services around the world, but in Israel, when you are riding the rails, you know, kind of a long distance rail that, you know, travel for, I don't know, two to three hours, you can basically, because it's, you know, run by the government, they are suggesting a service that helping people with disabilities, different disabilities, helping them basically from the kind of, you know, entrance of the terminal, walk them through, literally take them kind of hand by hand, or if they need, you know, walk the wheelchair, and help them onboard the relevant car of the train. And what we did in Moovit is basically make this information available. When you are searching for a route and the rail is part of our suggestion, we kind of added a big call to action, say, hey, click here if you need help. And we are basically connecting you directly, kind of smoothly, to a chat information designed and developed by the government that is basically asking you, hey, when do you need your help? Which day, what time? And boom, confirmed. Somebody will wait for you to do that. So different levels of, you know, kind of understanding needs and connecting needs with existing technologies or existing services. This is something that we are very proud of. And every time we have this opportunity to make this connection, we will gladly connect it.
I think that's incredible. And I'm so glad you mentioned all that, because I think oftentimes these don't make the headlines, these parts of the application. We don't know. I mean, you know, like you say, the voiceover user getting a little bit more information, people getting that information about wheelchair ramps or, you know, assistance available at stations, that is so vital. But a lot of people might not even think about that because it's not part of their lives. So the headline is Moovit's a great app, but nobody's really kind of digging into the why. And that's exactly what we're here for, exactly. Right? We get a chance to open it up and shine the light on it. I want to ask you as well, just finally, about AI, because, you know, AI makes, in my mind, information that is already available out there much more understandable. And certainly that's the whole point at the moment of this large language model, this natural language approach to AI, which is, I could say, for example, say, I want to get a bus tomorrow from here to wherever, and the information can just be presented back to me in a very simple language model. It sounds like you're trying to create that in the app, but does AI make it even better? And is that something you're even considering at this point?
Absolutely. This is something that we are, you know, we are understanding how the world is kind of reshape itself right now. And I can also tell you that as part of a hackathon that we are organized here several months ago, this came very high in the recommendation of the teams of how to leverage this, even as you mentioned, when you are kind of talking to Moovit and say, hey, take me to 1, 2, 3, 4, and how this information is getting back to you. Is it text only, or is it, you know, some combination of a map or something like that? So definitely there, definitely looking into it. It's not just in the user interface. It's even, you know, we are, you know, you mentioned before information. So we are kind of monitoring a lot of what we called, or what the providers are calling, service alerts, basically saying, hey, the, you know, the Piccadilly line in, you know, London, or line Q in Manhattan is going to be, let's say, shut down, or there are service issues, or the station is closed for the midnight, or you know, different reason. And there are plenty of service alerts all the time. This is part of our of the network kind of DNA. So in many cases, if you know, if we let the people, the riders that we, you know, cater, read this information, we usually take this information as is from the providers. We are not, you know, massaging this information, because, you know, we don't exactly know.
Well, it's not your job to change it.
Exactly.
It's your job to present it, right?
But then we made an experiment, and we took a lot of service alerts, and we kind of massage them through kind of generative AI models and engines. And we basically told the engine, kind of, can you make it, you know, just a shorter alert? Or can you give us the essence of this alert? Because, you know, it can be a large text with a lot of noise information. But the only information that you need to know is, hey, it's not going to open. It's not going to work between 6 to 10. Shot. That's it. You don't need all the rest. So that's like another level of sophistication that we are aiming or looking into, explore. So and of course all the back end and how to make the model of prediction and the ETAs and all that even more sophisticated, and how to take different insights and indicators from the current situation and the historical usage. So all that is super interesting, and it's of course part of what we do and what we are going to release in the next few months.
Well, I can't wait to keep up to date with it. I'm so excited by it. And I think a lot of people will have learned today a lot more about MOVEit than perhaps they knew that it could do, even people who maybe are a regular user. So that's brilliant. And we look forward to see what you do with it in the future.
This is the best of Double Tap on YouTube. Find more videos and subscribe now by heading to YouTube and searching for Double Tap Video Now.
Rebecca Rosenberg, and I am the CEO and founder of Reboka.
I have to ask you about Vision Pro, right? Because everyone's talking about Vision Pro, and I'll be totally honest with you, it gets the numbers up on YouTube when we mention Vision Pro. I don't know why that is. Why is everybody so obsessed? I cannot imagine. But you got hands-on with it, right? And you spent some time with it. I want to kind of wind back to the beginning of the experience for you, because for me as a blind person, I'm just not entirely convinced it's for me or for blind people. But for low vision people and for people with full sight, it's either going to be amazing or a complete flop.
I actually have some very fresh takes on the Apple Vision Pro, because initially, I said, so I have albinism, and so my vision impairment is not correctable by any means that we currently have available to us. I do, with that said, have glasses, and they help a tiny bit in certain very specific circumstances. So I wear them when I drive, and I wear them when I was in school, I would wear them in class. Those are like the only situations where they make enough of a difference for me to actually go through the process of putting them on my face. So when I initially got the Vision Pro, when we bought one, I was like, I'm not going to waste my time on these like Zeiss lenses I don't know anything about. I'm just going to go in and give it a try with my regular vision. And, I have written now extensively about what that experience was like and some of the, I think, pros and many of the cons around. I felt like I really needed to use a lot more of the accessibility features on the Apple Vision Pro than I normally have to do on my laptop or on my phone. Normally my text size is just a little bit bigger on those other devices, but on the Vision Pro, it was like I needed the special zoom magnifier that shows up in the middle of the screen in order to navigate myself around. I was playing with all the different eye tracking options, trying to figure out what I could get to work best with my nystagmus. And then yesterday, so I had ordered the Zeiss lenses once I had played with the Vision Pro a little bit, and I said, I'm gonna give the Zeiss lenses a try. It seems like an experience that might actually be enhanced by the little bit of difference that wearing those lenses makes. And I put them into the Vision Pro last night for the first time, and I was shocked. I was like, oh, this is what this experience is supposed to be like.
Big difference.
The eye tracking got better. The clarity of a number of things got better. My ability to feel like I could sit in it for a longer amount of time got better. Mm. And so I just was actually really very shocked at, especially for the eye tracking to have gotten better. Like, there were a number of things that I struggled with really early on, getting the cursors to recognize where I was looking, because I do have nystagmus and I have one eye that sort of turns into my nose when I'm looking at anything that is considered to be at a distance. And so I was surprised that just the addition of those like Zeiss lenses in my prescription, and I have a high prescription, that was able to really make such a big difference, especially in its ability to track where I was looking. I just thought that was very interesting.
Have you noticed that before? Because it's funny you say that, because I same as you, I have nystagmus, and my vision overall has got bigger problems because of my optic nerves not growing properly. Thanks, optic nerves. But yeah, woo indeed. I love it that, you know, I can sort of say to people, I've got like a multiple eye conditions. I've got more than you. And it's like, yay. And we have a big competition that's the worst competition ever. But, you know, the nystagmus part used to really irritate me because, like you say, it was always there. It was always prevalent. I don't know if you notice, it always gets worse when you're in stressful environments or anything stressful. Yeah. It's like, oh, everything starts. And I didn't think that that would be able to be relaxed by lenses. That's interesting.
I'm not even sure. So this is where my like engineering brain comes in. I'm not even sure it was as much about the fact that the nystagmus was better in a situation where I was wearing glasses as much as, and this is total speculation, but it's possible that because the lenses affect the way the Vision Pro is able to see your eye, that maybe it was looking at either a smaller or a larger part of the pupil or the retina, and it just was able to sort of, like the nystagmus was almost not canceled out, but it just didn't make as much of a difference because the Vision Pro in itself looking at your eye to figure out where you were looking was looking at a more specific or smaller part such that the effect of the nystagmus was significantly less. Total speculation, But
you say this.
From
the engineering point of view, right? And I wonder about your take on this because, from what people have told me, the Apple Vision Pro eye tracking is quite different to what might be considered the more professional standard eye tracking. It's kind of almost like a camera just looking at your eyes, right? It's not following your pupil or anything.
That's my understanding. Is that they do just have kind of basically retinal cameras that are on the inside that are looking at where your eye is and how it moves. I'm not an expert on how they have that set up exactly or exactly what the industry standard is. But it's very possible that just the effect that the lenses have on that camera's ability to see your eye minimizes the effect of the nystagmus.
I mean, it's working for you, right? I mean, and have you tried it since then? Have you tried it a couple of different times, different scenarios? Because I guess tiredness as well has a big impact on nystagmus.
That is a problem that I did see continue to exist even with the glass or with the lenses. Is that after about 12 minutes in the Vision Pro, my eyes are like, "Whoa, what is going on?" And the nystagmus gets significantly worse.
And your eyes must get tired.
Yes. And you can, I mean, I can feel within 10 or 12 minutes of having it on that the eye tracking stops working quite as well because my eyes are tired and now the nystagmus is worse. And I did, there's a setting in there that allows you to, it's called, I think, reduce eye movements or something. So the Vision Pro will ignore basically those rapid eye movements. I have found that it doesn't do anything. Maybe it's just me. It's very possible it'll work for other people who maybe have more sway in their nystagmus. Mine is more of like a jitter and less of kind of a sway. But I didn't find that setting to be entirely useful.
It must really irritate you, though. I mean, it would irritate me, I think. You know, I know it's kind of past my point of use. So I'm not going to buy one because I'm never going to be able to get anything out of this thing. So it kind of annoys me on your behalf that you can't get any enjoyment because I want you to enjoy it. I want you to love it, you know, and you can, right? You're getting those 10 minutes and let's just maybe park the visual impairment side for a second. What are those 10 minutes like? What is it like in that world?
It's really cool. And it's hard to even, I think, describe. It is. I have tried other virtual reality, augmented reality devices. This is just on another level. It really, especially in, I think it's called pass-through mode, when you can see what is actually around you. So in my case, it's usually my kitchen.
Yeah.
Like, it really refreshes incredibly quickly on what's going on in the real world. And the way that they're kind of able to make things appear as though they have depth, when you know that what your eyes are actually looking at on the Vision Pro is just a screen. It's really incredible the way that things look like they have depth and how the Vision Pro really has an incredible ability to know where it is. And so you can kind of put, you know, your Safari tabs in, you know, your living room, and you can walk into the kitchen and you can set up your other Safari tab for your, you know, cooking that you're doing. And when you walk back into the living room, your Safari browser is still exactly where it was before. It really,
yeah, you've left Google Chrome in the garage.
Yeah, exactly. It really knows where it is, and it knows where you are, and it knows how to connect you with all of those things. I think one of the things that I have found most interesting, if only because it's like a little weird, is the persona. So I did an interview several weeks ago in the Vision Pro, and so I had to set up my persona, which is basically like this holographic version of your upper body. And you kind of have to set up in the Vision Pro that you're going to take these pictures, and then you take the device off and you turn it around to face yourself, and you scan your upper body with the device. And it is creepy. The output is really very scary, especially
when
it's
not,
sort of,
it's kind of real, but it's not real, isn't it? It's that kind of,
it really hits the uncanny valley very hard. And especially, and not so much that it's not a great scan, as when it tries to mimic the facial expressions that you're making, and it just, at this point, we just can't replicate some of the nuances of these facial expressions, and it looks sort of stiff, and it looks really creepy, but still very cool, still way better than I actually would have expected it to be.
Are you going to keep it? You're going to keep Vision Pro?
I am going to keep it.
You've been listening to the best of Double Tap on YouTube. New videos are published throughout the week. To make sure you don't miss out, head to YouTube and subscribe now. Search for Double Tap Video. Thanks for listening, and catch you next time.
Hi, I'm Red Sale, inviting you to download the latest episode of My Life in Books, where internationally acclaimed authors discuss their lives, their work, and three books that have resonated with them. That's My Life in Books, available wherever you get your AMI podcasts.